I'm here with Alexander Mercurs, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, Brexit has finally happened. Once again, not the Brexit that I personally wanted. I always say that, but a Brexit has happened. It is in the books. The UK is out of the European Union. And to me, what capped it all off were not the votes and all the stuff that was going on in on the EU side or what was happening in London. But for me, the highlight was watching Nigel Farage's last speech. And he actually kind of got kicked out. I don't know if you want to say kicked out, but no. You know, it definitely ended on a controversial note. And I wouldn't expect anything else other than Nigel Farage's last speech in Europe to end on a controversial note, but a happy controversial note for me. And I thought it was once again a great speech by who I consider to be one of the best orators I've seen. In my generation. I mean, he gives great speeches. But Alexander, starting from Nigel Farage's last speech and looking towards the future, what's going on now?
Well, you said Nigel Farage's last speech. I know you mean that it's the last speech that he's made. Let's hope it's not the last speech he ever makes.
Last speech in your...
I know. But I'm just to make this point, because, of course, what he did after the 2016 referendum was that he retired from politics, saying that his work was done. And as a result, we had 3 years of backsliding. And it's important to remember that he took his return in the spring of last year, in the spring of 2019, and his reformation of the Brexit Party, or his creation of the Brexit Party, to electrify the political system, force the overthrow by the Conservatives of Theresa May, and to bring us to any kind of Brexit closure at all. Because to be absolutely clear, if he hadn't done that, Theresa May would still be Prime Minister, we would not have had an election, the thing would have still been bogged down, we would be going from one vote to another, and it's quite likely that that backsliding would have accelerated. And we could very easily have found that we were not going to have any kind of Brexit at all. So when he made that speech in the European Parliament, and as you correctly say, he was both, as he often is, he was both a great orator and gadfly. I mean, he knows exactly how to annoy the European establishment. And it's bizarre, by the way, how they always let themselves get goaded by him. But anyway, he was teasing and playing them relentlessly. And there was a moment, I understand, when his mic got switched off, which was just farcical. And he was waving his Union Jack and all that. So, I mean, he was playing all those sorts of tricks with them, which, as I said, he was setting out to annoy them. But as you rightly say, he was in a tremendously buoyant mood. Because, of course, the task that he has given to himself over the course of his political career, he's now well on the way to achieving. Now, I say well on the way to achieving. Britain has left the European Union. It is no longer a member of the European Union. It no longer sits in the European Council. It is no longer represented in the Council of Ministers. It no longer elects MPs to the European Parliament. It is completely withdrawn from the political structures. And unlike what happened with Theresa May's extraordinary and appalling deal, it has also, to a great extent, distanced itself from the economic structures also, in the sense that the deal that Boris Johnson renegotiated with Macron and with the Irish government, no longer says that Britain has to align its policies, its economic policies, with the EU. It no longer keeps Britain locked into a customs and single market arrangement with the EU in all but name. And of course, it's had to make concessions. He had to make concessions on the Irish border to achieve it, but he did. And to be very clear, it's a much more real Brexit than the Brexit that Theresa May would have negotiated, which would have been Brexit in name only. Now, what is going to happen now is what matters. And I think this is where we have to remember that there has to continue to be discipline and focus, because if there is not, there is still a real chance that things could go horribly wrong. There has to be a negotiation of some kind for a trade deal. Now, I say has to be. Of course, there didn't have to be. We could have had a no-deal Brexit, but Boris Johnson ruled that out. So he's committed himself to negotiating a trade deal, an all-encompassing trade deal with the EU. He's got himself a very tight timetable to do it. I think some people believe that this timetable is perhaps too tight. I don't think so. I think he's entirely right, Boris Johnson is, to go for a very tight timetable, but he wants to sort it out over this year. Now, that is going to be a very complex trade deal to negotiate. It's going to involve a lot of detail, and Boris Johnson, up to now, has not been a master of detail. And it's possible there is the danger is that because he's not a master of detail, but he's got this commitment to try to negotiate a deal fast, he will start to make concessions, trade concessions, to the EU in order to get his deal done this year, rather than take on the EU's incredibly tough negotiators over the next few months. So this is where I think Nigel Farage still has a role, because if Nigel Farage simply quits the scene, as he did after the 2016 Brexit referendum, then we could very easily see, in fact, I predict that we quite likely will see a situation where Britain leaves the EU, you know, on terms that, you know, Brexiters can live with, but that all that is then lost all over again in the forthcoming negotiations. I mean, that's an important point to remember and to bear in mind. So I predict he will stay, and I predict that there will be tough negotiations. But I think that if Farage is still there, we will see that those negotiations will harden up, and the direction of travel will be for Britain to leave the EU entirely. But we will see.
What are the chances that Boris does negotiate, you know, with a tough stance? He negotiates a tough position, and the EU stays firm, and they're also hardened on their position, and it just, you know, passes the deadline, and that's it.
Do you know, actually, I personally think that with Britain having quit the EU, balance of advantage in these kind of trade negotiations has now shifted decisively towards Britain and against the EU. I mean, if you go back to Theresa May's deal, the point about Theresa May's deal was that Angela Merkel, who I am convinced was the true author of that deal, was determined to keep Britain in the single market and in the customs union in order to keep Britain as a secure market for German exports. That was always ultimately Merkel's agenda. And what she was doing was that essentially she leveraged Theresa May's need to get some kind of a Brexit with her determination, Merkel's determination, to keep Britain within the EU single market. Now, Britain has left the EU, so Merkel no longer has that leverage anymore. But the Germans still need to sell their goods in some form to the British. So I think, actually, the balance of advantage has shifted to the British. The question is, will the British make the most of it? I think if the British play their cards well, we will get a trade deal, and it will not be a no-deal Brexit, because there won't be a need for one. That's my assessment.
Yeah, but there is that opportunity that can just drift
Oh, it could absolutely. There is
nothing taking place, and then you get that no deal Brexit.
There is a very real possibility.
You get that WTO Brexit, right?
There is that possibility there. But as I said, it really depends very much, not just on Johnson. Johnson, as I said, is not a man who does detail well, or at least he hasn't up to now. Of course, he surprised many people over the last couple of months, but he hasn't up to now. But it also depends not just on Johnson, because Johnson isn't going to go to Brussels and negotiate line by line an agreement with Michel Barnier, the EU's very tough chief negotiator. He's going to have to rely on trade negotiators to do it for him. Now, the question is, are those trade negotiators still committed to keeping Britain in some kind of customs arrangement? Because that's still possible. Or, and if they are, is Boris Johnson able to supervise them properly to prevent that happening? That's the risk. Now, the other possibility, as you rightly say, is that both sides dig in. And there is a lot of anger within the EU at the fact that Britain is leaving. And of course, the EU also has to, at a political level, show that the British gain no advantage by leaving. And I can imagine some of the more hardline figures within the EU wanting to stop any kind of deal being done at all for that reason, because they calculate, I think wrongly, by the way, that Britain will suffer more than the EU will if there is a no-deal Brexit. But I think on balance, the Germans always get what they want. And I think the German interest is to get some kind of deal done. And if Johnson plays his cards well, some kind of deal will be done. By the way, a lot of people are saying that the two big problems are going to be these. Fisheries, the British want to regain control of their North Sea fishing area, which has now been, it was part of the EU fishing area. And the British are only able to extract around 30% of the fishing catch from it. So they want to get that back. It's not hugely important for the British economy, but it is extremely iconic. And it's important for the Conservatives, because in the election, the fishing ports, which have historically always voted Labour, this time voted Conservative, because they expect to get back control of Britain's fishing ports, fishing seas, fishing oceans, you know, the fishing areas. So that's going to be an important issue, but of course there will be big resistance within the EU to that. Already you're hearing stories that the EU is saying, well, you know, all right, we'll give you your fishing rights back, but in return, you must concede to having whatever trade arrangements are agreed, administered by the European Court of Justice. So you can already see the kind of leverage that's going on. And I think for Johnson, that would be a very dangerous line to take, because we know that the European Court of Justice will, in that case, start to reapply EU law into trade arrangements between the EU and Britain. So that's one thing. Fisheries is an important thing. And of course, there is the vexed question of Northern Ireland, because the arrangement that Johnson made, which basically creates a customs border down the Irish Sea, as opposed to a customs border along the border between the Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, that arrangement only continues up to the point where this deal that he's trying to negotiate replaces it. It's only a transitional arrangement. So the question is, what kind of a border with Northern Ireland is he going to go for in the end? Is he going to continue along the direction that he set himself when he did this deal with Macron, which ultimately must end in Irish unification? Or is he going to start pushing now for keeping Ireland, Northern Ireland, in the in the United Kingdom go back, in effect, on what he conceded in the transition arrangement, risk a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic, and then run into all the problems that flow from that. So, you know, those are going to be the two big sticking issues.
All right. Now, Boris also has the opportunity to start hammering out deals with other countries. That's part of the benefits of being sovereign again, being a sovereign nation. And of course, the big one is the United States. So what do you see there?
Well, it's going to be a tough negotiation, but I think he's made the right calls on two big issues, which were Huawei and the Middle East. What the US allegedly told him, I mean, and people, we've had people like Pompeo here, is not have, you know, cut out Huawei entirely from Britain's 5G systems and give absolutely unstinting support to US policy in the Middle East. Now, Boris Johnson has refused to do that, and he is right. Now, he's right, not just from, you know, whatever abstract geopolitical terms that you think, but it seems to me that with the US, which is another country that negotiates very tough and very strong, if at the very start of a negotiation, you start to concede to them everything they demand, then you're going to find yourself in a situation where they will just take you for a ride. You've worked in the United States. You know what tough negotiators the US is, how, you know, the business culture in the US is very tough and hard-nosed. I think that Boris Johnson, who, by the way, was also born, I believe, in the United States, understands that and realizes that if you're going to get the US's attention and you're going to get their respect, you've got to play hardball also. I think this has been widely misunderstood, by the way. I think a lot of people think that, you know, this is going to make negotiations with the US more difficult. I think taking a strong position is absolutely essential if those negotiations are going to work successfully in the interests of Britain as well as the US. So I think he started well, but it's going to be a tough negotiation also, because obviously, the US all push for advantage. Everybody pushes for advantage in trade negotiations. That's why they're negotiations. And we will see what eventual deal is done. I think there will again eventually be a deal. I think, this is my own guess, that those negotiations will really and properly take off after we have seen where the negotiations with the Europeans are going. If the negotiations with the Europeans go nowhere, then Boris Johnson will emphasize the negotiations with the US. If the negotiations with the Europeans are successfully wrapped up, then he will push for negotiations with the US in earnest, because he'll have got the European thing sorted.
Okay, and finally, Alexander, in the last couple of minutes to close out the video, how do you see the UK economy faring in the next year or so after this historic Brexit?
Well, here we are. Brexit has happened. Apocalypse has not occurred. There will be some time periods of adjustment, but you know, I've said this so many times. It's a big country. It's a successful country. It will survive. In fact, it can prosper. But it does need to do certain things. We've talked about negotiations with the EU, and it's got to sort those out. It's got to sort out its negotiations with the US. It's got to start thinking about other countries. And this is where Huawei is important, because it's clear that Boris Johnson also wants to have, ultimately, negotiations with China. Trade negotiations with China. But there's now rumors, and I'm not going to put it higher than that, but they've crept into some parts of the media here that he's also thinking of going to Moscow to attend the 75th anniversary celebrations of the end of the Second World War. He's going to accept, in other words, a Russian invitation to do that. And apparently he's going to talk trade there. So the two biggest European, well, two of the biggest European economies, Britain and Russia, the start of a rapprochement. Well, who knows? There are already articles from the hardliners, the anti-Russian hardliners in parts of the media which are already warning against it, which may be another sign that it is being mooted. Britain used to be this great trading power. It has the advantage of the English language. It has the most sophisticated financial system, international financial system in the world. It can capitalize on all of these assets. It can prosper and do well, but it's got to start using them, and it's got to start thinking outside the box and thinking in that kind of a way again. Perhaps Boris Johnson is, perhaps the political class in Britain will let him if he is. There's everything to play for, but nothing is sure.
That's the great part about Brexit, isn't it? And now the UK is free to start exploring all kinds of options. That's the beautiful part about it. They're not chained to this terrible authoritarian Brussels regime.
That's the point of it. I mean, you know, that's the whole point of it, I would have said. I mean, otherwise, if you're not going to stop doing these things, if you're not going to start making trade negotiations with people like the Americans and the Chinese and possibly the Russians, why do it at all? I mean, that seems to be obvious. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to drift along and do nothing. But it does require some flair and imagination. I think Johnson understands this intellectually, and he's made a strong start. Let's see if he's able to build on it. And you're absolutely right. Britain couldn't do these things if it was part of the EU, if it was still tied to the EU. The problem for a country like Britain being tied to the EU in the way that it was is that it had to follow EU policies on everything, on all trade issues. And EU policies on trade issues meant basically accepting the German lead and accepting German you know, interests, which were always paramount in the EU. Britain, which is a very different economy from Germany's, can now start doing things differently and for itself.
All right, Alexander Mercuris, Editor-in-Chief of the Durand, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell and smash that like button, because YouTube makes it a point to not show our channel to anyone that is looking for it. So make sure you hit that like and make sure you share the channel outside of YouTube. And also look for us on iTunes and on SoundCloud as well for an audio copy of this video. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation helps keep this channel up and running when YouTube demonetizes us. And Alexander, another thing that helps us is when you go to the Durand shop and purchase merchandise.
Indeed so. I mean, and we have made the point, as we've said in our previous videos, in earlier videos, that we have absolutely outstanding merchandise, and we've talked about our superb mugs many times. We don't just go for any merchandise. We've made a point of going for the best quality mugs you can find, and these are outstanding mugs, the best quality shirts, because that is, if you like, our way of showing respect to our viewers and to the people who support us. So these mugs, I've spoken about them many times now, I've drunk from them every day and many times. They are outstanding mugs. They are strong, they are light, they keep your tea or coffee warm. I'm drinking again I'm drinking Russian Caravan tea from this one. So, you know, Russian Caravan, that's like what Boris Johnson's probably looking for. He wants caravans crisscrossing Asia and Russia coming to Britain and doing trade there. Well, we'll see. But it keeps my tea in perfect hot condition so that I can keep myself warm through the long cold nights in England when I'm researching topics for the Durand, which makes it possible for us to do these outstanding videos, just like the one we've just done. So, amazing mugs, and you notice what good condition it's in. It's been drinking from it so heavily, not a chip, not a crack, not a sign of discoloration, a sign of its quality. This one, by the way, has the coat of arms of the Russian Federation, as you will see on all the porcelain in the Kremlin. So if Mr. Johnson does screw up his courage and go to Moscow for the 75th anniversary. He will be seeing it there on the cups and saucers that he's going to be served tea from by Mr. Putin in the Kremlin. So we don't just have wonderful magic mugs. We have wonderful shirts, like the polo shirt I'm wearing now, with the double-headed eagle of the Durand there, you can see, which is different. It's a more, I would say, Roman kind of double-headed eagle than the Russian one, it embodies our purpose, which is to hover over the world, looking in both directions towards the east and the west, which is what Mr. Johnson also says that he wants to do. So you can find shirts like this in our Durand shop. They're all 100% cotton. They're beautifully made. They're incredibly stylish. They're very comfortable. You will also find T-shirts, long-sleeved and short-sleeved. You will find V-neck shirts. You will find hats, hoodies, stickers, all of superb quality. All our shirts are 100% cotton, as I said, and you will support the Durand by buying them and enjoy owning these great things. So come to our shop, support the Durand, be the proud owner. Alex will tell you how.
Go to thedurandshop.com. You will find a link in the description box down below. It was Constantine the Great, Alexander, Constantinople, that saw the double-headed eagle, correct?
Absolutely.
And Constantinople being where it's located, which is pretty much the bridge between Asia and Europe. I think Constantine the Great zeroed in on a good logo.
Well, absolutely. He absolutely did. And of course, that's exactly right, because he actually located it there because it's between Asia and Europe. And it's actually just in Europe. But you just cross the bridge and you're in Asia. So that's what makes it so appropriate for us.
All right. Your dogs are telling you to get going.
Barking to signal his enthusiasm for the double-headed eagle, both of the Durand and of the late Roman Empire of Constantine the Great, the 13th apostle, I would add.
That's right. To those late Roman. That's right. Very good point.
The late Roman Empire. Yeah. Which went on to 1453. Just to add that little historical detail.
All right. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Durand. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.